previously on Popping Collars.
So that I kind of want to line, like, where do Christian Scientists fall, or are they not even in the discussion? And does Scientology fit in at all? And are there forms of, you know, we're talking about forms of Christianity.
Yeah.
But at what point does it become, if there's a cult of personality rather than a cult of Jesus?
Yeah.
That's direct. What's the answer?
What's the answer?
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection of faith and culture. My name is Betsy Gonzalez, and I'm the head chaplain at the Episcopal High School in Alexandria, Virginia. With me on this episode is Greg Knight. Greg, where are you and what are you up to?
Hi, Betsy. I am in Palm Beach, Florida, where it is 89 degrees and blazing hot with super humidity. And so I'm down in Palm Beach, Florida. I'm the director of children and youth ministries at Bethesda by the Sea.
Excellent. Also here is Ricardo Avila. Ricardo, where are you and what are you up to?
Hi there, Betsy. I am the interim rector at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Long Beach, California, where it is currently 63 degrees, rather cold for this time of year.
All right, and our special guest for this episode, that would be Liza Banks Campagna. LB, where are you and what are you up to?
Hello, Rev G. I am in study hall currently, in high school, and it is, I think it's 50 degrees out and raining because we have seasons here.
Yes. Yes. This is the 59th episode of Popping Collars, and today's topic is stand-up comedy. And I have to say, it has been an interest of mine since I was younger than LB herself. I remember back in the day on my VHS, I would record VH1's half-hour comedy hour, and I would watch them over and over and over again. And there was one that was a David Spade one where he also had a whole riff on Bono and U2. So it was like a mashup of my two favorite things. And I just loved it, loved it, loved it. And I've always loved stand-up comedy, I think, for so many different reasons. The boundary pushing that it can do, the formats for storytelling and how you can take the tragic and make it comedy and all of those things. And I think as someone who then eventually gets into talking in front of people, the lines between preaching and stand-up are really, really blurred. They're very faint in a lot of different ways. And especially, you know, we try to have some humor in the pulpit too. It's one of those human emotions that draws people in. So I'm curious, we kind of pegged this episode based off of Netflix kind of changing the stand-up game, that we're getting a new stand-up special every week. It really kicked off full force with two Dave Chappelle specials, which Dave Chappelle has been kind of coming back into the limelight. He can go places that other folks can't always go. And he will just lead you right in there and be curious about it with you. And the reason why we have Liza Banks on the show is because, Liza Banks, you're 17 years old, right?
Yes, 17.
But in comedy, how old are you?
So April is my 4-year anniversary.
Okay.
So I'm 4 years
April
old.
You will be four. So ever since she was 13, Liza Banks has been doing stand-up comedy around the DC area. So I'm curious, LB, when you get up and are in front of people, is there a line that you won't go to?
It's interesting. And when I first started, you know, I kind of was the same way. Like, my person was Louis. I love Louis C.K. And I watched him and was like, I got to do that. And so when I first went up and I was 13 and had braces and was like 2 inches shorter, I talked about things that were just not, like, they weren't okay for me to talk about, but also didn't really apply to my life. I think it depends on who you are, you know, and where you are in life. I'm 17, so there's not many serious, crazy things that are happening to me that I can talk about. It definitely takes a certain maturity, and not just in age, but just in stand-up, to talk about it, because you can come across as that jerk who just likes to say controversial things, and that's never what you want to do. And there's comedians who can do that and get away with it, but they're not necessarily, like, well-loved.
What is it that you like, LB, about like, the way CK and Chappelle, let's say Chappelle, the way he pushes the boundary?
He can take you there, and you know it's going to be good. I mean, I think he has gotten a lot of flack recently with the two specials about being really controversial. And I think with terms of the gay and like the LGBTQ thing issues are kind of predominant in the criticism, because it doesn't seem like he's very, I don't know, sensitive to it, but I don't know. I think he can pull it off, and I think he's really smart. And when you're talking about, you know, in this day and age, what is stand-up supposed to serve? And I think in a lot of, in both of his specials, he retells stories where he was attacked, you know, and he kind of plays the victim, which I really like, because I think now we all, in a way, feel like the victim. Like every day we're like, something's under attack, where it's just, you know, someone personally is attacking you, or it's your voice or your rights or your healthcare or whatever it is. So I really like that he can sort of play the victim, where we all kind of feel like the victim.
I feel like comedians get to this point where they get success and they get money and they have a life that takes them away from where they got their original bits and where they kind of made their original observations. And now you're rich. All you really have to talk about are like your other rich friends. Like, I think the best part of the whole special is when he's talking about his reaction to Kevin Hart and like seeing Kevin Hart backstage and like trying to convince his son that he's just as funny as Kevin Hart is. Now, that's a funny story, but that's a very particular story. Not many people are going to be able to tell a story about hanging out with Kevin Hart backstage. And I just feel like some of these older comedians, once they get established, Dave Chappelle is a perfect example. Jerry Seinfeld recently, you know, they run into this block where they're like, well, I'm going to say something controversial. Oh, and why are you getting offended? Like, why are you being so PC?
Well, but then I love the Kevin Hart bit, because being a parent and, you know, just prepping myself, like, I'm doing pretty good. My kid thinks I'm pretty okay, right? But that we're going to get in that zone where I'm not backstage with another parent who's just performed and I'm performing, but we're going to get to a point where we're going to be over at someone's house and someone's mom is going to be way cooler than me. And it's going to be the same. Why can't she be as cool as Sydney's mom? Mom, she totally let us do that all the time. What's wrong with you? Or, you know, ignore. Right. And so it's all of those same parental insecurities, but you're comparing two celebrities. And so I think I found that he did a great job playing in his world.
I agree with you, Greg, about the whole celebrities talking about other celebrities. I think a lot of famous comedians do that, and I've sort of noticed it as sort of like a hacky, I mean, and he structured his first special around the four times OJ. I don't meet OJ Simpson four times. Like, it doesn't happen to me. Hopefully never will, but
well, I will confess I have not seen the Dave Chappelle specials yet. I did watch the Dave Chappelle show when it was on, what, 6 years ago? I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
More than that. Stand-up.
Like 10, well, 10, I think.
2005.
Oh, but Key and Peele have been doing the show ever since. That was when the line that I loved.
I'm a pretty big fan of Louis C.K. in the sense that I just saw him about a month ago, and I've been watching a couple of his specials to prepare for this, thinking I'd get to Dave also. And when I saw him a month ago, first thing he talked about was abortion.
Yes,
second thing I saw that. Was suicide.
I've seen that hour, yeah.
And I kept looking around. It's like, I'm glad I'm here alone because I'm the priest, and what will people think of me? So then, of course, I mentioned having seen him, and like two of the most progressive, like this couple, they're so progressive and lovely, but they said, oh my God, we loved him. We were there too, and we saw him in Milwaukee. And I was like, what? How can you do that? So I don't, it's kind of fun. I don't know. He gets away with it. And I'm still trying to figure that out, because I feel uncomfortable and yet liberated listening to him talk, because he goes there and then he takes it even further. So I think, I don't know, it seems to me the best comics allow us to live out our worst urges and kind of thoughts we wouldn't normally voice to others.
Well, I think it's that it's the shadow, letting the shadow out to play. You know, it's the part of me that, you know, yes, owns a very large box of Cards Against Humanity cards, right? I mean, it's the part that, you know, like I played Cards Against Humanity with my mother, and which was really, I played it with my father, I played it with my whole family. My mom turned to me, we're playing this first game, and she's like, oh, this is how the shadow comes out to play. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, you know how we all have kind of the shadow and the light, these parts of us, and kind of the yin yang, right? So that there are shadow parts of us that need to kind of come out. And if we don't let them come out in some ways that feel kind of, you know, whether it might be laughing at the joke or some other ways, they might come out in ways that are not so hot and kind of destructive and those sorts of things. And so I was like, oh, well, that's an interesting concept. I like that. And, but, you know, I'm not going to stand up in my pulpit and say them, you know, but it might be things that kind of taking an element of humor and truth and putting that into the story of the person who's telling them.
I think the role of comedians, I think, I don't know who said it, but I've heard it and I think it's true. Like, we're supposed to say what you're thinking, but too afraid to say, sort of, in a way. And I think that really applies for a lot of things and can go a lot of different ways. But in terms of controversy, it is like, we can talk about these things and you can, I mean, Dave Chappelle talks about getting booed off stage in Detroit. Like, you can kind of take it or leave it. Like, there's definitely times where you say things and it just does not land at all. That is sort of what you're supposed to do in a way. And it doesn't have to be controversial. I think a lot, I say some things that are not controversial at all, but they are things that people think about, but don't actually vocalize.
See, now that's interesting, Liza Banks, because, you know, Betsy made a quick reference early on in the introduction to this connection between stand-up and preaching. When you say that stand-ups say things that people are thinking, you know, but too afraid to say, I think that's kind of the job of a preacher, is to ask questions of the text that we all have of these biblical stories, but we're afraid to ask out loud because we're afraid of judgment or whatever. And I think that really what a good preacher does is engages the text at those really hard places and asks the tough questions that people have about these things, so that you can see, like, you know, here's a priest, here's a deacon, here's a layperson, whoever, who's wrestling with this, just like everybody else is wrestling with this stuff, you know, all in pursuit of, like, truth, all in pursuit of, like, figuring out, like, well, where do we stand in the middle of all of this stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I tend to, I don't know about Ricardo, since we're kind of regularly up in the pulpit and talking, you know, there are some things that I've wanted to say that sometimes I don't say, but that I want to say it in a way that leaves it open, so people will go with me on the thing I want to talk about. You know, I'm all about trying to be prophetic and, you know, but then there's elements of this balance, and I never want to be wishy-washy. I want to be clear about where I feel text is calling me. But at the same time, Greg, I do what you do. Like, if I'm fine, there's something in a reading that I am wanting to run the other way from, that's what I need to talk about.
Right.
That's where I need to go and be present, because if I'm thinking it, someone else is thinking it.
About 70% of the time, I begin a sermon with something humorous or that I think will make people laugh, because actually it puts me at ease. I have this theory that if you want people to hear something in a sermon, you kind of loosen them up a little. Like the joke I had with the former rector is, I rub their belly and then I stick the knife in. And so,
yikes.
I know.
Oh, my
Sorry.
Lord. People are getting janked over in the long.
Not going to be true.
Well, they keep coming back.
So, they do. They love it. They can't get enough. They love that belly rub. Must be good.
So I start with a joke, right? I start with a joke, or I start with a, and then often it's at my own expense, because those are actually the easiest ones, because I'm so freaking mortal human. But then I say something serious, and often it catches people by surprise. And because they're at this level of ha ha ha, and I'll say, and so you got to do this, or your life is at stake. They're like, and then I think it reaches them in a way they might not let it. I express doubts about the resurrection on occasion, and, you know, it'll be coming up maybe in a couple of weeks. And I've had people afterwards.
Fingers crossed. Will it happen again this year?
We'll see how I wake up. But, you know, people have come to me afterwards, and they've done both. They've said, it's so great to hear you up there talking about this, and it's one of the things I find really hard. But then I've had people say, do you really not believe in the resurrection? And I said, no, I didn't say that. I said, I'm wrestling with it. I said, but then aren't you like a priest? what's the story? Why bother? It can go both ways. People might wonder, then, what is your status as priest if you are having the same doubts they are? They kind of come to you for reassurance. Or, you know, well, if he believes it, I don't have to, you know, or if she believes it, I don't totally have to yet. Like you were, like this conversation started, they're saying the things I'm feeling but shouldn't say, and it's cathartic for me because they're saying it. And I think catharsis is something that happens with comedians for me when I watch them. And I appreciate that, because if they don't say it, they're like the fool that tells the truth to the king. You know, what is that how it worked back in the Middle Ages? Yes. There was one person who could actually say the stuff that no one else could, or they'd be killed. And I think comedians serve that purpose.
Well, and there's this element too. I know LB and I have talked about this, of vulnerability when you get up there, and how vulnerable you are can be how potent and effective your comedy is. You know, and I have to say, I heard, Ms. Campagna, that you allowed some people to come
yes.
and watch you this past weekend, which for a long time you didn't let people come.
I know, for about 3.5 years. And then yes, this was the first time on Saturday I had a show in DC. So yeah, I let them come and I was vulnerable in front of them. And I mean, I don't want to praise myself too much, because it did take me 4 years to say, okay, I'm good enough for people to watch me. Because I mean, for so long, I was just too afraid of bombing. And I mean, I still bomb, but you know, those first 2 years are really hard, because you just bomb all the time. Like all the time, you're just getting up there and not getting people to laugh. And it's hard. And I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot about the world then. And I sort of built up enough courage to say, yeah, you can come now. But I also knew that I would do well. So I don't know how vulnerable I was in that moment, and how it took me a while to get there.
When you go into a show, like, do you know your set when you go in, or do you kind of feel it out sometimes?
I have my notebooks right here. I use these little notebooks. Let's see. I have like set list. So this is a set list. Cora was the name of the venue. And it has all my jokes that I used that night. I use pretty much the same jokes. I have new jokes that I try, and I, you know, kind of throw them in sometimes, but I have usually established jokes that I use. And this has been nice, because I can like look back at other sets and then write new ones. So yeah, I go in prepared with, the advice I was given early on was like, build your, you know, killer five, and then move on to like killer seven, and then killer 10. So you're not like, it's not like a new seven. It's like two more minutes plus that five. Yeah.
Are you going to give us one of your killer five or seven? Can that happen? Does it have to be in context?
I think it always has to be in context. Podcast is not the preferred platform.
No, probably not.
People ask me that all the time, and
tell us a joke.
Tell us a joke, and it's like it's like sitting next to someone who can sing. You're like, can you just sing right now in the dining hall, please? Like right. It's weird.
Yeah.
And I, when I first started, I like kind of gave into that sometimes. I would tell jokes, and it was just not good. Cause it's a wrong setting. Like, I remember I told a joke to my roommate's dad, and it was just, he did not think it was funny at all. And it wasn't like a joke I told. It was like some knock knock joke. And it was like kind of offensive, and like, it was bad. And needless to say, we didn't room again. Like,
It was over.
Yeah. Or I imagine the other thing is that people tell you jokes once they know that you're a comedian. Like, oh, I know a joke. And then they start launching into something.
Or there'll be something that is funny that happens. You're like, put that in there.
Yeah.
You're like, that's your story, dude. I'm not going to tell your story.
In the church world, a similar thing happens when people find out that you work at the church. They start talking about how much of the Bible they've read or something like that. I'm not going to give you a pop quiz, man.
They apologize for swearing all the time. Like when they first meet me at a party, and I'm not in uniform, and sorry, Reverend. I'm like, gotcha. Yep.
I tell you, I recently did a marriage counseling thing with a couple, and the very first session, one of them said, damn. And they were like, oh, sorry. I said, that's okay. Well, by the end of the session, they were saying some they were using the F word. They were saying mother F. They were like,
at each other? Like,
No, they were just telling stories, and they were, and then she made me so effing pissed that I did. And I was like, I just wanted to take a S on her bed. It's like, oh my god!
No, no.
Really?
Wow.
I didn't say carte blanche, you know.
So, under the stole.
I know. I just had to go like bathe afterwards, but
not to keep going back to the Chappelle stand-up special, but like the one part of the Austin show that really stood out to me was like the moment when like someone sort of yells something from the audience and he has this sort of exchange with the audience really quickly. And then he just grabs a stool and he sits down and he asks for a cigarette and people yeah. start throwing cigarettes up on the stage. And it has this moment where it's like, it feels like something happened and he just needed to reset.
Yeah.
And so now he's just kind of figuring out how to get to through the reset button.
Yeah.
And it's just like that moment was just so like, it felt really intimate. It felt really private. It felt like you were seeing Dave kind of work something out in his mind.
Mm. Yeah. And
like that's like, I think that those moments, like it's moments like that. It's moments like when he tells a joke that makes himself laugh and then he hits his, you know, his leg with the mic and stuff. Like,
yeah, the tapping of the mic is funny you bring that up because I wanted to talk about that because so there's this guy. So Dave Chappelle is like a hometown hero. He started in D.C. And there's two guys who started out with him, Donnell Rawlings, who went to high school with my dad, who I met through my dad, which is really cool. He was Ashy Larry on the Chappelle Show.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah. So he went to TC. And cool. then there's another guy, Tony Woods, who I don't know if he was ever on the Chappelle Show, but he is a DC comic and he's sort of, you may not know his name. He's had like a couple of HBO specials, but I just saw him, I think over spring break. I was at this place I go all the time in DC and Adams Morgan, and he gets up on stage and, you know, he does like 30 minutes, you know, just at an open mic, but there's people there and he does this thing. And so he tours with Dave Chappelle. That's the connection. He is like, he opens for Dave Chappelle a lot. And he does this thing where it won't get a laugh that's good enough for him, which in every other comic's mind would be like them killing, and he'll just tap the mic. Like, he doesn't do it as Chappelle does it, which he kind of like giggles and shrugs and taps his leg, but he just taps the mic and everyone explodes. Like, it's so funny. It's hacky in a sense, but he pulls it off. And when I saw Dave Chappelle do it after I saw Tony, I was like, that's it. Like, they must have like saw one of them, saw the other do it, and now they both do it, and it's so genius. And it is like a reset button. Like, it's like I'm telling a new joke, and when Tony Woods does it, he taps it and he just kind of like, he pauses and he just kind of like thinks like, what am I gonna say next?
That involves a lot of like give and take with the crowd, you know, just like feeding, like you're listening to the crowd just as much as you're sort of standing up telling stories. Like, you're like that level of intimacy, like you're feeling something together. Like, that's how you know when to go to those moments.
Yeah.
Well, and I think one difference though between you know, preaching and stand-up comedy is knowing your audience. Like, often as preachers, most of the time we know these people, you know, we know right. their stories, we know what's going on with them, and they know us, right? And know us in a way that beyond, you know, an image that we project that a celebrity might do. But then there's the audience full of strangers where you can get up and do whatever you want. And it's definitely, it feels like it's flying with different nets. It's different in that kind of way. And I've wondered whether, I mean, there've been times I've preached a group of people who I don't know. I mean, that's happened, but it's definitely a little more intimidating because I don't have the hook and the experience together, but I guess then maybe you go to human experience? I mean, how do you approach the stranger aspect?
I think for me, when I, you know, get on stage, you know, 99% of the time it's strangers. Mm-hmm. So I think I start every show. Recently, I've started every show like, hi, my name is Liza Banks. I'm 17. Liza Banks is actually my first name, but I'm not going to call my last name because I'm 17. And that usually gets some laughs and sort of like gives the audience time to like, oh, she's a kid. You know, you really get the chance to fail in front of them because you don't have to face them the next morning, which is the reason why, like, that's the excuse I give to people who want to see me, who I'm like, I don't know if I want to face you in the morning when I don't do well, which is why my parents have never seen me. And also because I talk about them. But
there's, as Betsy was saying, I think there's a comfort in having the same crowd come Sunday after Sunday that you know, because you can use some of those same themes and get them to laugh a little easier. Because of the familiarity.
Yeah.
For example, the congregation where I am knows well my weakness for cinnamon rolls and pork belly buns because I'm always talking about them. And so like I preached recently about Adam and Eve, and it's like, how could Adam and Eve be so dumb to like, God's like, don't be eaten from that tree. And then they do it anyway. And I said, who wants a red delicious apple? And I said, then I thought about, you know, what if that tree had like, you know, freaking hot, delicious cinnamon rolls hanging from it. You know, it's like I would have pushed Eve out of the way. You know, run at it. I can do that. And cinnamon rolls are funny to them because I'm kind of talking about them a lot.
You know, the reason why I'm on a podcast called Poppin' Collars is I like to use pop culture in my talks. So, and I want to hit some sort of cultural reference. So I'll look up top movies of the year that I know my students were 8. Or I know they when they were 12, you know, so that then I do have that targeted thing going on in my head. But today, like today, I had a whole room full of parents, like parents who were trying to decide whether they're going to send their kids to school here. And so I wanted to hit them as well as hit these other people. And for me, I actually call it my Simpsons. I base it off of how people enjoy a Simpsons episode, that you can have a 7-year-old watch a Simpsons episode and they love the fart joke. And then you can also have an adult walk out and, you know, watch The Simpsons and see the social commentary that's hiding behind everything and the politics that's hiding behind everything. And that's the way I've always preached, whether I'm really talking to a room full of elementary school students or whether it's a room full of high school students or whether it's in a parish, because you never know who's in the room. And you got to kind of be always playing with the levels is kind of the way.
You're like a Pixar movie.
Dude, all areas and maybe crying. All age levels and tears. That's what I do.
Wow. That's intense.
So, Greg, you have our employee pick. What have you been into?
Okay, so podcasts. I've been listening to a ton of podcasts lately, and
what's that, Greg?
I know, right? So the first is called "Missing Richard Simmons," which is a 6-episode series about a guy who was good friends with Richard Simmons, and you know, was just trying to figure out like.
Who goes
into hiding, you know, for 2 years and doesn't come out and stuff. And so it just became kind of this exploration of like celebrity and fame and what do you owe people, you know, when you're a public figure. And so it was pretty compelling and it was very short, which made it easily consumable. So that was good. And then the other one is called S-Town by the producers of Serial and This American Life. And it's very much like Serial in the sense that I think podcasts are going to be very different now that this one has come out. Because, you know, the big thing before Serial came out, like nobody really thought about the idea that you could do these things in seasons, you know, and there was this kind of sense that, oh, well, we have to do it every week or every other week or something. Right. And Serial kind of made a different model. And what S-Town does is it brings a whole new model, which is that it dropped all 7 episodes of the podcast at one time. And you can consume it like a book, which I think is how it's supposed to be read or listened to. It's supposed to be listened to as if it's a novel, and it's incredible. And I mean, it's just totally amazing. And so I went down those 2 rabbit holes recently of just storytelling podcasts.
You bring us back full circle because that, you know, for me, it takes me back to Netflix because that's what they do. They just drop the whole thing. You know, here's Luke Cage, boom, you know, here, you know, whatever. They just drop everything and you just kind of can fall down a wormhole of whatever that is for however long you want to.
It's amazing because I totally did lose track of time. It's like, you know, there are 7-hour long episodes and all of a sudden I'm done with the 7th episode. And I'm like, wait a second. That means that was 7 hours, but that can't be right. Like, you know. Where can they find us, Betsy?
Oh my God, Greg, so many locations where they can find us. They can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, any place where you get your podcast needs met. You can also find us on Episcopal Cafe. We love Episcopal Cafe, and we know that you will too. They feature us every time we have a new episode, and we really appreciate them and their support. So thank you, Greg. Thank you, Liza Banks. Thank you, Ricardo. This has been Popping Collars, my friends. And keep those collars popped.
That's right. Pop, pop.
All right.